again. We're coming to you from the trenches. I'm Rita Sand.
We're going to tour another 150 cities or so with this film and have a discussion and seeing what we can do to own our media, because the public owns the media and we've got to take it back.
Coming up, we'll hear from a recent panel presentation to launch a national tour of a documentary film critical of America's media system. On February 25, 2014, the city of Chicago played host to a screening of the documentary film Shadows of Liberty. The film is an in-depth examination of the American media system, its history, its politics, its failings, its shortcomings, and efforts by the public to influence media and media policy for the better. The film, Shadows of Liberty, though it has received widespread international coverage and critical acclaim, has received very little attention in the United States. To remedy that, the staff of Shadows of Liberty have launched a national screening tour of the film, where they plan to screen the film in city after city, with planned screenings in more than 170 communities across America. And Chicago served as the home of the first screening of the national tour, with an event held at Northwestern University Law School in downtown Chicago. A staff member from the Bloom Legal Clinic at Northwestern University Law School began the event.
And I'd like to welcome you to, on behalf of the Bloom Legal Clinic, to here to Lincoln Hall for a very special screening of an internationally acclaimed documentary, Shadows of Liberty. Let me first tell you a little bit. This is a very historic room. There have been many enactments and things here, one of which was when the death penalty in Illinois was ended. It happened right here in this room. Tonight's screening kicks off a coast-to-coast screening tour, the first leg of which will bring the film to 10 states for 15 screenings in 15 days. In addition to the Bloom Legal Clinic, the other organizations that made tonight's events possible are Doc Factory, the Illinois Campaign for Political Reform, MoveOn.org Chicago, Multiculti, Chicago Media Action, the Chicago Green Party, Rainbow Push, and WZRD 88.3 FM. If you haven't had a chance yet, after the film, you're more than welcome to visit the various informational booths that these organizations have set up to get some information, and also there will be DVDs of the documentary available for sale. I'd like to also thank tonight's organizer, Deborah Brown, as well as members of my staff, Myra Ruiz and Stephanie Boruena. You know, tonight there's been a lot of talk about how on the internet there's now a multi-ability to get all kinds of information, and we're no longer bound by global media and the big conglomerates. I think you're going to find that that's not exactly true, that global media and large conglomerates still control access to give you the information about all these new forms of media. After the film, we're going to have a very interesting panel discussion with plenty of time for your questions. And we're also very fortunate tonight that we have the filmmaker, Jean-Philippe Tremblay, with us this evening. It's now my pleasure to introduce Jean-Philippe, who will give you an introduction to the film.
Thank you all for being here. It's really an honor for me to be here representing everyone who made this film along with me. This is a great city. This is a great learning institution. This is a great room. I visited it earlier this afternoon and was kind of blown away by this room, and felt very fortunate to be able to present the film here. The room, it kind of reminds me a little bit about democracy, a government for the people, by the people, where information is the pillar of a free society. And this is what this film is about. I've been around the world showing this film, but it's really in this country that we really need to show the film and present it to the American public and have a discussion about what we see on the screen and what we see in our streets and what we hear, see, and read in our media outlets here in this country. So I hope you enjoy the film. Stay with us for the discussion afterwards. We have a stellar panel of people who work for media here in Chicago. And once again, it's an honor to be here and to kick off our U.S. tour here in Chicago. For the next 20 days, we're going to tour 10 more states. And later in the spring, we're going to tour another 150 cities or so with this film in venues like this, in cinemas, in community centers, and having a discussion and seeing what we can do to own our media, because the public owns the media and we've got to take it back. Thank you.
After the film concluded, a panel of Chicago activists and media producers were assembled.
What I'd like to do now is introduce the moderator for our panel discussion and ask our panelists to please come down here. Our moderator is Bill Turk. Bill is a Chicago author and managing director of Q4 Radio AM 710. And I'm going to turn it over to Bill and try to figure out how to turn off the projector.
Thank you. And I just want to say thank you, everybody, for coming tonight. My name is W.C. Turk. I am a Chicago author and the managing director of AM 1710, Q4 Radio in Chicago, an independent, progressive, and community radio station. We've got a handful of questions here for our panel, which is seated behind me here. But your questions are important as well. We'll keep this portion of the program to an hour. I'll ask everyone to keep your questions, and we will be taking questions from the audience as well, to keep your questions and remarks as brief and as concise as possible so that we can get as many voices as possible. Exactly the opposite, actually, of what the corporate media does. Yes. And ladies and gentlemen, another round of applause for J.P. Tremblay and And if I could, I'd like to introduce our panelists. Seated down here at the end is filmmaker Jean-Philippe Tremblay, or JP. Seated next to JP is our own Nancy Wade from the Green Party.
The 5th Congressional District candidate.
Absolutely. Next to Nancy is Mike Callis from MultiHealthy. Is Mitchell Shapanchik from Chicago Media Action. And lastly, yes?
Well, Chicago Media Action and the Ministry of Truth.
Radio program. You were holding that back, I mean, thank you. And seated next to him is Dale Lehman from the news director from WZRP 88.3 FM in Chicago. JP, we hear a common refrain in the corporate media that people simply do not care about independence of information, net neutrality, or media consolidation. Yet the response to this film so far has been fantastic. I believe this film will grow, as evidenced by this room here, and grow organically. What surprised you most about the response to the film so far?
You know, I mean, there's a couple responses to the film. I mean, there's one from the people. When people see the film, it's actually a very dynamic response. People are amazed, on the one hand, that we were able to make this film and to present it. You know, a lot of people have presented this kind of information. In a way, like me, I've had problems to distribute it because obviously most of the outlets for films and television and all that kind of stuff is owned by the Big Five or their friends. That's been the response from the people, you know. But I guess also the response from distribution or the Big Five is basically what you would expect. You know, the film here is divided into several chapters, and basically what we say is that
when there's that kind of power and that kind of control over news and information. There's several ways, angles that they can deal with information. They can either on one hand silence it, and that's happened to us, or they can manipulate it and present it in a certain way, and that's happened to us, you know, in favor of the corporation. So basically, we've had a really good response from the people and a poor response from the media conglomerates. But this just really...
You expected that.
Yeah, it's what we kind of expected, but it just really empowers us to, you know, with Deborah Brown and my other colleague, Zainab Yildiz, we took about 3/4 of a year, it's been almost 2 years since we finished the film. So we took almost 3/4 of a year to really produce this U.S. cross-country media tour. So it just empowers us to do even more, to invite even more and more people to come and see it, and really show it in the country where it was meant to be seen. So that's been responsive.
And I wanted to put our panelists a little bit on the spot here, and just get your first impressions about seeing the film, if you saw it for the first time tonight, or what your first impressions were when you first saw the film.
This is the second time I've actually seen it, and I think it helps people validate...
If it helps.
Well, I think it helps validate people's sense that there's something terribly wrong. It sort of functions like Democracy Now! Does as an antidote to the cognitive dissidence that plagues this society. And I think it reveals many events that have passed through the edge of people's consciousness and never really had a chance to take root and develop into a demand for accountability that's so lacking. We're, as ordinary people, left to be accountable and told we must be accountable, yet the hierarchy, the ruling class, the politicians, and the owning class are hardly accountable at all.
Mr. Mitchell.
I have to admit, this was the first time I saw the film, and I have to say, an outstanding job. And also, as far as any documentary goes regarding the media, and I've seen a lot of them, this might be the best of them all.
Thank you.
Well done on that score. In spite of all of the praise that this film is due, there are a couple of things that I think the film did leave out, and actually should be mentioned. And I'll take a moment to mention a couple of them. One point actually pertains to, I'm glad the film mentioned this, the run-up to the 2003 media ownership rule fight. They had mentioned Michael Powell, son of Colin Powell, as FCC chair. There was some pretty serious resistance in the run-up to that, including some that was organized in this very room. On April 2nd, 2003, the Midwest Forum on Media Ownership was one of maybe about a dozen or so informal hearings that were held regarding media ownership. And it was held in Lincoln Hall at Northwestern Law School, this very room, April 2nd, 2003. The date, it so happens, is seared in my brain because by an extraordinary coincidence, my uncle died that day of a heart attack. He was just 49 years old. It was critical. Not only were there a lot of people here, including some folks from the media themselves, and actually FCC Commissioner Michael Copps, who came here and spoke from this very platform. This hearing and the number of other hearings across the country were all critical because they helped to raise that awareness, to build momentum that actually wound up stopping, even though the FCC actually voted by a 3-2 vote to basically eviscerate the remaining media ownership rules. That was overturned precisely because there's a court in Philadelphia ruled in our favor.
This is the perfect place to be hosting
this film. Yeah, this is uncannily the perfect place. But let me just finish one point. The FCC wound up getting rejected by the court on that score, and the media ownership rules rolled back precisely because a million people, in the words of the court, more like 3 million people, historically unprecedented number, spoke up about this. Shouldn't that matter?
Yeah.
And in the eyes of the court, they did, and we wound up winning that fight.
That's the way to win it. Michael, your impressions of the film when you first saw it?
I thought it was a great documentary. It touched on a lot of things that you don't hear about, even though they're very controversial, and obviously you don't see that stuff on the media, the mainstream media, with the crash of TWA or the fact that they pulled the story about the Nike show, and then you see them with the branding and the corporate logo, and I think these are powerful stories that people need to know about, and because it's too often silenced, we really need documentaries like these to They're important tools for getting that message out there. And also, this is a great location as well because the FCC had a public hearing. The last time I was actually in this building was right around the corner, and that was for the merger of Comcast and NBC. And what we saw for that were hundreds of people who showed up in protest. Pretty much unanimously, all the people from the public were opposed from it, opposed to the merger of Comcast and NBC, and the only people that showed up in favor were those who were actually getting money one way or another from the industry. And that was something that very revealing, so it's good to be back here, especially under these circumstances, to be going forward and to see so many people here who are ready to mobilize and actually do something to address this issue.
Excellent. Nancy?
Just want to clarify my introduction, that I am running for Congress in the 5th Congressional District of Illinois, often known as the former district of Ron Emanuel, the former district of Ron Boyovich. That's where I'm running. If you live there, vote for me. If you don't live there, volunteer for me. So, naturally being a politician, I gotta make that pitch. But I am a Green Party candidate, and the issue of media is particularly important for third-party candidates. The Green Party does not take corporate donations. This just makes me prouder of that fact. This movie makes me prouder of that fact. But as a third-party candidate, or another party candidate, a candidate as an alternative to the corporate duopoly of the Democrats and the Republicans, the issue of media is extremely important to me. The fact, for instance, that Jill Stein, the 2012 Green Party candidate, who was on the ballot in 72% of the states, who qualified for federal election money, matching money, was shut out of the debates. In fact, went to the debate at Hofstra University in October of 2012 with her running mate, Sherry Hunkela, attempted to get into those debates as a legitimate presidential candidate, was arrested, taken to a so-called dark spot, not allowed access to a lawyer, was with the plastic handcuffs that they have now, handcuffed to a hard chair. She and Sherry were there for 8 hours, no access to a lawyer, no access to a bathroom. And there was silence in the media on that event. And there should have been, that should have been a headline. That should have been nationally broadcast. So this is an issue particularly dear to me as a Green Party candidate.
I'm going to grab that back. Good thing I got a big mouth because I really don't need the microphone all that much. So I'm going to start a couple questions here just to get the ball rolling. If anybody has any questions, please let me know. And I got you first, but I'll come back to you in just a few moments. We're gonna get a couple of questions in here. In this discussion, often there seems to be this broad brush sort of assumption. The reality is that America is a very diverse community. It's evidenced by this room, actually. Is media consolidation and corporatization a threat to the realization of true, diverse, and vibrant perspectives critical to our nation and species? Given a naked effort to marginalize and discredit strong black, other political perspectives, immigrant, gender, and ethnic voices by a decidedly white male, wealthy, and right-wing monopolized media, what does that mean for those communities? And is it simply another means of segregation or ghettoization of minorities and minority voices? We'll start down here with JP.
Thank you for that question. I think the mainstream media and the power that they hold definitely serves a purpose of self-interest, and certainly it's a perspective of white, male, rich, establishment, very conservative. Kind of establishment, and they hold that power, and that's exactly why they're there, and try to gain even more power, and that's what's really dangerous, is that they're getting even more and more powerful, and more conservative. Then on the other side, you mentioned the other groups, we can call them minority groups if you want, here in Goodman, the film says the the silenced majority.
Yes.
So we can actually, you know, change the perspective of that. You know, I think she's right when she says most of us are against war. I mean, that's such a simple kind of notion to think about and to actually understand. And I think when we talk about these so-called minority groups together, is actually a majority, but a silenced majority. So it's about having more meetings like this, more opportunities to voice our opinions, voice our views, and get a hold of what's called the mainstream media, and actually break it up so that we have more of a diversity.
Absolutely.
And I think that's where I stand on your question.
Absolutely. I'd love to hear what Nancy has to say.
Well, that is one of the great tragedies of this the corporatization of media, the homogenization of media. Now, I didn't actually give my reaction when I first saw this movie, which I have also seen twice. It was depressing. I bet a lot of people feel that way. It was depressing. However, on the other hand, the fact that it exists, that's encouraging. The fact that you all are here tonight, that's encouraging. The fact that we want to fight this, and that all the people who came and testified against the monopolization of the media in the previous issue, that gave me hope. That these were people from across all political spectrums, that gave me hope. So and us here tonight gives me hope.
Michael.
I would agree with Jean that it's really the silenced majority, because you know there's five corporations that own about 95% of all the radio, TV, newspapers, magazines, publishing companies, PR, you know, music. List goes on. So there's so many people that are really left out, and I see this time and time again as a filmmaker and independent journalist when I go out to different. Protests and rallies and community meetings that really should be covered and that should be headlining in the mainstream media. The media is just totally absent there. So there's so many people who are being left out of the spotlight, and usually it's the people who are making important controversial issues more prevalent, and for some reason the media chooses to ignore that because that doesn't fit into their model of infotainment and the sensational journalism that's going on right now. So it's really about like the independent journalists coming together have to be responsible for going out there and covering these events, being on the scene, because if there's not people with the cameras and pictures and tweeting and live streaming, you know, these messages just don't get out to the public. And that's so important because, you know, it shapes the way we think as a society. It really dominates the conversation. And no matter what your issue is, if you're fighting, you know, for peace and to end the war, if you're trying to raise awareness of homelessness or poverty or the prison industrial complex, whatever your issue is, if you don't have a vibrant media there to actually get that message out to the public, then you're going to be at a disadvantage. You can't get the support you need to actually make those changes take place. And you know, that's what I see all the time is, you know, the media has just always been absent when they're needed the most to be there and to provide that voice for people.
Absolutely. Mitchell.
As as media tends to concentrate, the opportunity for voices to be heard diminishes. I'll mention one specific example. It turns out that within the United States, we now have a grand total of zero black-owned, high-power television stations. 8 years ago, that number had been 18. It is now down to zero. The last five were all owned by Roberts Communications, which wound up selling their remaining five TV stations to ION Broadcast Networks, ION, for about $8 million. And other stations had also been selling off their TV stations, basically to score a quick buck, and the money, those stations themselves were mostly intended to be repurposed for the use of their spectrum for cell phone rebroadcasts or cell phone usage, because that spectrum that can be used for cell phones. So we're seeing those are venues for which those communities and those outlets
are now gone.
And it essentially cuts off those communities.
That's the potential there. And that's where one fight and one avenue for fighting to try to restore and to widen those opportunities. We've had some very fortunate success in the last 3 years with the broadening of and the advance of a low-power FM radio window that the FCC has opened. So now apparently another 800 low-power radio stations will be occurring in communities across the United States, including, I'm happy to report, in Chicago.
Yes.
We'll probably get maybe four more radio stations. But that's hopefully four more stations that we wouldn't have had otherwise. We have to continue and build on them.
Yeah.
The question is, do we need more diversity of voices in the commercial message, or do we need community-based conversation that addresses the needs of people directly? I would bet most of the people in this room had some sense of what's askew in our society, which is why they're here. They know there's something wrong and that the deck is being stacked against them. I think they want to know what they can do about it, whether regulation is going to save the day. It may have a hand to play, but the time is short, and whether regulation is going to suddenly fall into the hands of activist groups that are going to challenge corporations, or it's going to give to those who have money, regardless of what race or background they come from, an opportunity to play the corporate role, to have a seat at the corporate table, that would be played out in re-regulation. So.
Excellent, thank you. I'm going to do the Phil Donahue thing here and run around the audience and grab a couple. This young lady had her, her hand up first. Bear with me here.
Sorry, I'll try to keep it short, but I have a couple of things. Number one, thank God for the internet, because there's like two parallel kinds of news and information. One is the internet where you can listen to RSN or alternet and learn something about what's really going on, news and analysis. If you look at public radio, public television, it's dominated by corporate power. Even if it's supposed to be public, it's totally not public, because more than 50%, I think, of their money comes from corporate funding, and they will not tell you anything that's going on. Take climate change, which is like the greatest catastrophe we're facing. How much do you hear about it in public television? Broadcast, almost, they totally marginalize it. They're getting a little bit better, but not enough. And, today, for example, I was pulling my hair out because on Alternet, I was reading about what was really going on in Ukraine, fascist takeover of the government, Germany trying to, marginalize Russia, et cetera, et cetera. What are you reading in the New York Times? Democracy, is prevailing in Ukraine. How much longer are we going to put up with this? 15 years ago, I went to a conference on the media in New York, and nothing's changed. I mean, what are we going to do about it?
Did anybody want to respond to that?
Go
ahead, Dale.
I think we should take over Michigan Avenue with the bridge and let the media corporations see us. They're all concentrated down there. The only thing these corporations are interested in is money. The market model precludes them from, when they're not directly owned by some of the bad actors like GE and Westinghouse or the defense industry, they serve them, and they are busy collecting the money that makes them profitable through advertising. The last thing that people who pay for advertising want is controversy to be exposed for the criminals that they are and for the crimes that they commit on a daily basis, 365 days a year.
Only because I'm here, I'm going to go to the gentleman next.
I recognize that there's more interest in this issue coming from the political left than the political right. But I think it's important to emphasize that it's really bipartisan, because I don't think this issue is either addressed by either Republicans or Democrats. And so in my personal opinion, this film waiting until the last 5 minutes to portray it as a bipartisan issue, yes, it hits the target, but in my opinion, it misses the bulls of it.
I'm going to work my way around the room. I will work my way back around.
I mean, if we're going to wait until the last 5 minutes to, I think you're referring about to the, when we refer to President Obama. You know, we also refer to President Clinton just as much as we did to George Bush and to Ronald Reagan. So we didn't wait until the last 5 minutes. That's short to say that.
I welcome this film. There have been others on media. This one has a certain kind of pizzazz to it that I think maybe will have a broader appeal to people. And I'm glad to see so many people here.
I think one of the points is that there's no shortage of material for this film, so you had to edit it at some point.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the really tough things about making this film is that I'm not telling the history of the United States, of democracy. Six individual stories of journalists all at the same time, so I had to make some tough choices, basically.
Over the last year, I read a book, and the phrase was win-win or lose-lose, and we were talking about a species, the human species, climate. And I just began to feel this in my heart. You know, as much as we hate the Koch brothers and all those corrupt corporations, aren't there any good ones out there? And I'm addressing everyone here. If everyone here could now say the words, Helen Zell is a wife of a billionaire in Chicago, and she's a wonderful person. She's a patron at the Museum of Contemporary Art. Helen Zell, I worked at the museum. I always thought you were a nice person, a good person. Can't you respond to this film, Helen Zell? Can you hear me, Helen Zell? Can't you respond to the good will of this film? Don't we need, Helen Zell, a free media?
Thank you, brother. Does anybody want to respond to that?
Is this the same, is this a moment of Sam Zell?
It is Sam Zell's wife.
Okay,
folks, to trash the tree.
Yeah. Do folks here know who Sam Zell is, living in Chicago?
Yeah.
Yes, no, kind of? Okay, Sam Zell had been the owner of the Tribune in the wake of, actually, the media fight. The Tribune gambled tremendously on the FCC's media ownership fight in 2003. They were banking on those rules to go away because they were planning a growth trajectory on that score. But they didn't get it. And what wound up happening was the Tribune effectively collapsed. The collapse came in the form of a shareholder revolt. Sam Zell, billionaire media mogul, mostly through real estate. Yeah, his big thing was real estate, wound up getting ownership, and he wound up actually running the company into bankruptcy, from which it wound up emerging and splitting in two. So, working our way backwards, this was all the result of the media activism that people in this room 11 years ago, which I'm very lucky to count myself as a part, have been a part of. The role here about Helen Zell is, I guess, tied in with the Sam Zell and the connection to the Tribune on all of this. That the Tribune was banking their future on getting these ownership rule changes passed, and we stopped them. That's a victory, and you know, that's something that we should celebrate in law, and that's something we were able to do.
Excellent, thank you. Yes, sir.
First of all, I think we should recognize Northwestern University and the school for hosting this conference. This is most unusual. Then a question. Would you agree that the main value, the main business of the mass media is to manufacture the notion of being a free press and then advertise it, moreover, and brainwash the people to believe that we in the United States have a free press, a democratic press, unlike any other country in the world. And I think that's the main poison. And I would like to see the part of the film of denouncing that and somewhat bringing the people in the embassy to the level of people in most of the countries that don't believe the president just swallow the things as we do in this country. Thank you.
I'd like to address that because I thought the film actually did so when it covered the experience of Gary Webb that eventually led to his discrediting by the mainstream media, even though the story he told was fully validated by the CIA itself. They were complicit with drug running and the cover-up of it. They covered that. Perhaps you would want more, I don't know, in depth. The film is pretty complex in telling the stories that it does tell, and it has a limited time for each individual story. But they did cover that, and I agree with you fully. The nature of how this system works is to create the illusion that we have a free press. It's free until you start to really create waves and challenge things, just like Occupy was free to exercise its Second Amendment rights.
First Amendment
rights. Well, it's Second Amendment rights. They were entitled to carry guns too. Free until they started to create waves that frighten people in this country. And then you can see how it was covered by the mainstream media.
Michael, go ahead, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, another thing is with the press. I mean, one, we mentioned that they own our public airwaves, which is the free press. You know, that should belong to all of us. It should be this free channel of information. But instead, you know, we've leased them under this supposed obligation of public service, which have, you know, it's been eroded so much that there isn't really that public service. Yeah. The only obligation that they have right now is to make profit for their shareholders. And that has a real conflict of interest, especially when you have these advertisers that are making these contracts, where if you want to get this money and have our product on your show, you can't have any negative publicity towards that company. So there's that serious conflict of interest where you can't get out those stories, and money is a major factor in that.
And for Nancy, I think if you're going to get anywhere with the Green Party, maybe you should have Enzo L. outfits.
Yeah, as I mentioned, we don't take corporate donations, so I won't be wearing a Pennzoil jacket anytime soon, or a Nike one, or anything like that. But the question with the Green Party is also always, well, if you're not going to take the corporate donations, what are you going to do? Well, it's a double-edged sword. We can go farther on individual donations. The Green Party does go farther on individual donations. But we have to have a lot of those. So getting the word out, it becomes very challenging. But one of the things that I wanted to bring out was I was part of the March on NATO, as thousands of other people were, maybe some of the people in this room. At the very end of that march, I did not want to be part of what I saw developing. It was quite frightening. There were Chicago City buses with, on the marquee says, "Chicago, my kind of town." Cannot imagine how surreal this was to see these city buses moving farther and farther in on us marchers, doing what they call kettling. So moving people in farther and closer together, and it became quite frightening about whether or not you'd be able to escape from this moving fence. And then we did leave and go to a nearby restaurant to watch the end of the march. It was very, very obvious, even from the corporate media, the police brutality that was occurring at the end of that march. Marchers who were not resisting, being beaten with batons, and it's on corporate media.
And yeah. Right, to bring it full circle back to JP's film, we saw complicity, we saw a partnership, not only between the authorities, if people recall the red zone downtown in which they created a sense of fear and panic, but there was a partnership between the media and between the authorities to divert the message of the protesters to what was actually happening behind closed doors, vast sums of money being paid off for war by countries, by and large, that were cutting social programs.
Yeah. Right, but my point is, this amazingly, this police brutality was actually being broadcast. But my question is, if people saw that, did you call those stations and ask them, why are you reporting this so positively? And the reporting was all about how great the police were, how fabulous our police were. On WBEZ, the reporting was how fabulous the police, what a good job. It was obvious to anyone with eyeballs that the police were brutalizing people for no reason. So my challenge really is, and I know many of you doubtless are activists, my challenge really is for us as individuals to call them on it repeatedly, repeatedly, repeatedly. Don't just sit back and go, oh well, I'll just turn to alternate. Call them on it.
We're going to move quickly around the room to get as many questions as possible, so try to keep brief.
So obviously the whole thing that has been criticized the mass media. So my question is, are there any mass media organizations that you see as able to maintain their integrity? And also to follow up, if there's any way to hope for the future that will be able to counter some of the bad things that have been highlighted in this document.
I'll mention one particular example that's been able to maintain its integrity, The Guardian. Oddly enough, not The Guardian of London, which had been until a couple months back, and then Glenn Greenwald's avenue for distributing Edward Snowden's leaks to the worldwide audience, including here in the United States, which helped to change the game. As far as what the best hope might be, and this actually dovetails to Edward Snowden whistleblowers, the people who happen to be in power, we were lucky enough to see Sybil Edmonds on this film, but the people in power who are able to shine a light, and the way that Edward Snowden had done it was very effective, and there's more coming, hopefully we'll continue on that. We need to foment that, and also in particular, as a quick follow-up, foment that among these media outlets themselves. I bet you that there's a ton of dirt on Comcast. Let's see if we can do what we can to help to get some of that out, and maybe we can stop their supposed buyout of Time Warner Cable. Just a thought.
I was just going to add to that because I think that's a very good place to start. But as well, here in the United States, let's not forget that in the past 10-15 years, there's been a real kind of bursting of new independent media. And you know, if you look up the media consortium, you know, they represent about 50 to 100 independent media organizations that are mostly based here in the United States. And of course, there's stuff like the Center for Public Integrity or Democracy Now!, all sorts of independent media organizations trying to keep power accountable. And you can start by looking up by looking at our website, see who the contributors in their film are, follow their organizations. And we also have a Take Action section of our website. Have a look at that, and that's a really good start for this kind of research.
What's your website?
The website is just shadowsofliberty.org, so it's the title of film.org.
Okay, I think I want to follow up on what you just said, or you just preempted me. I saw this about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I immediately thought, well, we got to get this out. And I just have one question for every single person that's still left in this room. What can you do with your family, your church, your dorm, your, I don't know, sorority, fraternity, or whatever other organizations you belong to? I think each one of us has a responsibility to do something to get this seen by a lot more eyeballs than just us.
I have my journalism.
I know you. You're just all trouble. All can do something, and I think this organization is very open to sharing the film in some way or other that isn't going to cost an arm and a leg.
Yeah.
I think JP would say, give the gift of the DVD.
You're absolutely right.
Because you're a capitalist too.
Public libraries that's not love this stuff. Contact your public library. They love this.
Yes. Well, we're trying to promote the film via this tour. And, you know, if you look at our website, we do have a... Exactly. And then we're going to have 171 screenings. So by all means, do spread the word. I mean, we can't talk about this film enough so that the message gets out there that, you know, we are thinking about the media and stuff is actually happening and people are actually gathering together. I also want to mention that the people I'm sitting with here represent a number of independent media organizations and also our moderator right there. And I'm always amazed by how, when I travel around this country, I found out about these new organizations, people that are you know, producing new media. So it just takes a little bit of effort to actually research that. And of course, there's our film as well. So absolutely, let's get out there. Let's just begin very slowly. Go on the internet. Go, you know, start talking to your friends on Facebook, on Twitter, things like that. Let them know about this and let's repeat ourselves. That's the thing. If we repeated ourselves as much as the mainstream media, we'd be miles ahead because they just hit us over the head every second of the day with their crap. So let's reverse the trend.
I want to check real quickly, Deborah, on our time, because I want to get as many people in here as possible. And I'll come right back to you, Michael.
Probably last question.
One last question?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to go to...
Hey, Bill, if I can comment on it real quick.
Please, while I'm running around
just
here.
Just to make a quick pitch for Chicago Media Action. You know, that's the organization right here in Chicago that's specifically designed to deal with media issues. And right now we're like re-energizing the group and we're trying to make media like an issue on the social justice agenda. Because too often we have people who are protesting about the environment and tar sands, fracking, the war, you name it. There's everyone protesting all these issues, but no one's really been raising that much hell about the media, and that's one thing that everyone has in common. If you need to, whatever your cause is, without a vibrant media, people aren't likely to know about it. So one thing we've been doing recently, we actually organized a march against mainstream media on November 16th, where we did a little tour through Chicago of all the major media networks and kind of run our grievances with all the companies. And this was kind of like a publicity tool to raise awareness of the media, but it was also an experiment to see what would happen if people actually protested the media. Would they cover the story or would they not? And obviously, they did not cover the story. We're in front of CBS News, where you can hold up your sign in their windows and say, "Hi, Ma, happy birthday," and so that. When we had our signs that said, "Report the truth, not lies," well, they brought down the curtains and they silenced it up. But fortunately, we were there with our cameras for Chicago Indie Media, and we documented this whole experiment, and we kind of show, you know, how they react when you raise this issue. But that's something that we're trying to do. We're really trying to mobilize people right here in Chicago to join this campaign, to take it to the streets, and make it an issue, to put pressure on them. And we've created a, we have the website, chicagomediaaction.org. We got some pamphlets out front. There's a Facebook page. And it's also a great network to keep in touch with other local media activists because we have to grow in numbers. We need more and more people to get involved.
Excellent.
So we post a lot of stuff on the site that you can share with your friends and family, and hopefully we can take this stuff and make it go viral and really make media an issue that a lot of people are concerned about.
Good man. I'm going to impose upon Deborah's charity here and try to get in two very quick last questions.
Just a really quick question. I don't know if it was already answered with the... response of the Guardian of London, but you know, I live in Chicago. I'm guilty of reading the Tribune and the New York Times newspaper. What other source can I turn to for the truth? Is it the Guardian of London? Do they cover, you know, domestic issues? Or I guess I'm a little ignorant about that.
I think that you won't find it in the truth in any single source, and you won't find it in the corporate media because that's not their purpose, especially if it is contrary to their profit and their domination. I don't read that, but I tell you, I do find lots of articles aggregated at a website called Common Dreams, and lots of analysis at a website called Counterpunch. as well as Truth Dig, where Chris Hedges, who used to write for the New York Times until he was offered an exit because his reporting was too accurate. So,
I'll plug a couple of websites. The Chicago Independent Media Center, that I mentioned, chicago.indymedia.org, I-N-D-Y-M-E-D-I-A. So chicago.indymedia.org. There are a website called Gamers Block that folks may be familiar with. That covers a lot of local issues. They also have done a reasonably good job about covering a lot of social justice issues as of late. So they're sometimes worth a read as well. Gapers Block. Chicago.indymedia, spelled I-N-D-Y-M-E-D-I-A.org, the Chicago Independent Media Center. It's an open news
Times.
What?
In These Times.
In These Times. It's also, that's a national publication based in Chicago, inthesetimes.com. Thanks for the random.
Hello there. My name is Nathan Bell, and as a guy who does read the media in the morning and presents to people via a radio station, in terms of, you can get, it seems like a lot of news sometimes worldly or globally, and sometimes locally here, and you have a lot of these, you talk to these upstart radio stations and upstart media outlets out there. Is there currently a coalition or some kind of an organization to bind those all together, become an actual force against these major five? Because it seems like enough small little things coming up can become one big thing. Does that currently exist, and how can we best utilize that to really make it a force?
The closest example I can think of to what you're describing might be Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. Not only does it air on WZRD and also on WCPT locally and on CAN-TV, cable channel 19 every morning at 7 a.m. live. And on the internet too at democracynow.org. That they've grown to about 1,200 stations from an original broadcast footprint of maybe like 7 stations to about 1,200. They're now an international broadcast footprint and across the United States. That might be the closest thing to what you're describing about. And they're also both formal and informal coalitions with lots of groups around the country and around the world. Maybe there isn't something that has been, you know, exactly formalized, but no, networks are out there. They're connecting with each other and hopefully doing what they can to grow.
One more pitch is for Chicago Independent Media, and what we're trying to do in Chicago is to create that collective of independent journalists, filmmakers, photographers, because when I go out to these events and mainstream media is totally absent, there might be a dozen people there taking pictures and with their video cameras, and I think that's the overall message, that we can't count on them to offer that product. We need to create it ourselves. We need to become the media. And that's one organization in Chicago that's trying to create that network of people working together so we can get the real information out to the public.
Excellent. Nancy Wade, I want to get your voice in here one more time.
Well, as we already found, I'm not a media person. I'm a person who's more dependent
that's
on
why I would
media.
Love you.
but of course, my angle is political. Don't support the parties who support the corporations. Don't support the corporate parties. Support the Green Party.
JP, last thought.
Well, again, it's just an honor to be here. You know, that was really the goal when we made the film, would be to get people to rally around the film where we would show it, and to promote the local independent media that's in the region. And that's exactly what's happened tonight, and I couldn't be prouder of that. I just want to thank you again, Bill, but also I want to thank Sam Tannenbaum, who made this possible, hosted me and all of us here tonight. It's just been a wonderful evening and a great kickoff for our USA Media Tour. We're going to go for another 171 screenings independently. So here we go. Thank you.
And we can't forget the. Folks, films like Shadows of Liberty are rare and critical. A filmmaker and his team, the filmmaker and his team are working hard to make sure audiences across the United States have the same opportunity to attend screenings and engage in conversations about the state of our media, as well as the threat to our democracy and what we can do to make it better. To keep the tour independent, the filmmaker and his team are relying on people like you to help provide financial support necessary to keep the show on the road, literally to keep it on the road. They are currently in the midst of a Kickstarter fundraising campaign to raise $13,500 by March 20th. If you can contribute $25, $10, $100, or any amount that is meaningful to you, it would make a huge impact.
$1, $2, $3, that really makes a huge difference.
You can pick up a donation envelope at the Shadows of Liberty table right outside the door here, or get a text message with a link to the Kickstarter campaign. Text SOL, S-O-L, to 581, and I'll have this information for anybody who needs it. 58124, yes, sir?
58124?
58124, yes, sir. There are also Shadows of Liberty DVDs for sale with proceeds, again, which would make a wonderful, wonderful gift.
How much
are the DVDs?
$20.
$20.
Oh, that's not
bad. Streaming rights at a library or
anything. Yeah.
Yes, that's with Bullfrog Films. Bullfrog Films. So look up bullfrogfilms.org. I believe it's dorm.org.
And I found this out as an author, that if you go to your local library and request this film, they buy the film, just like they would buy my books, and that's an extra sale, that's extra support to the filmmaker.
But when they screen it, that's the point.
Will they screen it?
Yeah.
I think that was
the question was whether you could legally screen the film, the film, which you can buy here tonight in DVD at a library, and the answer is no, because these are for home use. You could show it to your friends at home or people you invite in from the neighborhood, but it's a different licensing, and the filmmaker is licensed to Bullfrog Films for distribution, and they have a much higher licensing fee for institutions, just like, everybody needs to make a living. So.
All right, and as we wrap up here, guys, so we can get everybody home safely tonight before we're hit by the polar vortex, in the end, ultimately, it is up to us, both in the energy and agency we take and demand in our government and in our desire to see true change. Some years ago, giving a speech at Western Illinois University on Rwanda and Bosnia, a teacher stood up from among her students and asked me a question, and they looked at her with such expectation, and she asked, "What can one person do?" I was momentarily taken aback, and then answered, "Jesus, Gandhi, Mother Teresa, Nelson Mandela were all one person." We know their names, but all too often we forget about the millions who stood together where possible and alone when necessary. And that is the question fundamental to each of us. Did we stand for something? Did we make a difference? No one may answer that for you, and no one will ever hear that answer. But it will resound loudly in your own soul that you stood for the rights, the justice, and the dignity of your neighbor. Stand guard at that fire, my friends, and keep it alight for those who will follow you.
You've been listening to a Chicago event on February 25th, 2014, about issues raised by the documentary film Shadows of Liberty. Once again, the website for the film Shadows of Liberty is shadowsofliberty.org. And an update. The Kickstarter campaign mentioned during the panel exceeded its fundraising goal of $13,500, raising more than $14,200 when the campaign ended. That concludes this episode of From the Trenches. If you'd like to learn more and get involved, please visit the website of the Chicago Independent Media Center at chicago.indymedia.org. I'm Rita Sand. Special thanks to the staff of Multiculti of Chicago for assistance, and thank you for listening. Be sure to join us again for another episode, From the Trenches.